Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven. Hello and welcome for joining me for the Dog Gone Wrong podcast yet again. And I just want to say that we are approaching 20 episodes and I have no regrets. I am loving doing this. I'm getting some wonderful feedback from listeners, people who I know, people who I don't know, reaching out, some amazing guests who've reached out and gone, I've listened, can I join? Do you want to come on mine? And I'm loving it. I really am. It's an adventure. And yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say a big, big thank you for joining me on this journey. And if you haven't reached out yet and you are listening, then please do. You know, I'd love to chat. And sometimes I just sit here and I'm like, I'm just chatting garbage. But apparently it seems to go down well. So, yeah. Today I wanted to kind of cover a few things, really, and just do a bit of a brain dump. It's been a reflective time for me recently. I am going through a lot of changes, changing jobs, and we are welcoming Ada the Labrador permanently, which is what I wanted all along, but it's nice that I finally had that confirmation. And she's just turned a year old, and she's in some ways a typical one-year-old Labrador, and in other ways an absolute superstar. And yeah, she's been so far, you know, touch wood, so far she's been so much better. The experience has been so much better than it was with my heart dog, Merlin, at this age. But, you know, I have a lot more knowledge, a lot more skills, a lot more experience. And my life is totally different to what it was when Merlin, my flat coat, came along. He did my absolute nutting as a teenager. How I still had a full, you know, head of hair throughout that, I have no idea. There were times I could have murdered him. But at the same time, I loved him to bits. And I was told that, you know, don't get a flatty because there'll be too much of a handful. And I should have heeded that advice. But, you know, I didn't because I was like, well, no, watch me, which was very much my cocky self at that point. But I took him on and we had an amazing 11 years together, or just, you know, a month shy of 11 years. And for a healthy flatty, that's an amazing age to make. There is a group on Facebook which is called Double Digit Flat Coats, and there are celebrations every time a dog reaches 10. So they're in the double digits. And it's sad to think that there are still breeds around that don't commonly live to that age, and flat coats, unfortunately, are one of them. Cancer is rife within the breed, and it's very common for them to develop cancer between 6 and 8, and you just lose them because they're such happy souls. They don't actually show you a change in their behavior quite often until it's too late and the cancer has, you know, progressed on too much. So yeah, I'll tell you a bit about his health problems today, but I'm sure his story will span over a few episodes over time. He's a whole book that I do want to work on and write. I've got the outline. I've had the outline for years. Just, it still hurts. So it'll happen at some point. It'll happen when the time is right. I'm still trying to get my head down and do the second editions of my 3 books. One of them is more or less done. I just need to get back to it and do it. But life, and, you know, with all these changes happening at home at the minute, it's just not gonna, you know, I'm doing my best not to put pressure on myself. I know it needs to be done, but now isn't the time. Hopefully you can't hear the Labrador in the background chewing. Teenagers, eh? But at least she's quiet and chewing. So yeah, going back to Merlin, the goon, as I call him, Merlin, the Merminator, Merburger. He had many, many names. And he was a very big flat coat. He was a good 3 inches bigger than breed standard. He was a big black fluffy bear and had an absolute heart of gold, but sometimes that's what got him in trouble. But I just started kind of getting on top of his exuberance. I mean, he always had exuberance, but the over-exuberance. And when he was about 2 and a half, I think, I started doing like gun dog training with him, dummy training. I was learning how to do it, you know, what to do. And I do still do that kind of stuff with a lot of pet gun dogs because it helps them. I had no dreams or aspirations of going on the shooting field with him. It was just more to give him an outlet for his natural instincts and tire him out in an easy way. And I just started doing all that kind of stuff, and I'd got the springers as well at that point. I think we were down to one Springer at that point, but we did have three for a while. So with Mika, the remaining Springer, I was doing good dog work with both of them, with dummies like blind retrieves, working on direction control, and used to take him on walks with some other flatties as well. Very good friend of mine who had flatties, and we used to take them out walking. And I think we went out for a walk locally with where there was like these kind of lakes, and Merlin was running in and out of the water. He absolutely adored water. And he ended up with some kind of injury. I think he'd kind of collided with one of the other flatties, and I had to rest him for a while. And I thought, well, these things happen. It's not the end of the world. And I'd rested him for a while. And then I think it was actually the night, or this might be actually totally mixed up. I think the problem started actually was the night that we lost Jazz, which I've covered in a previous episode when Moss was born. And we went to let the other dogs out for a week, and Merlin managed to catch himself rushing out the door, catching his back end on the door frame. And there was a bit of a yelp, but he just, fine. And then with me rearing puppies over the following few weeks, the dogs weren't going out much, so he was naturally being rested anyway. And then I think a couple of months later, I'd met up with my friend with the flatties, and he'd collided and he'd ended up injured again. So it was because of this, because it's something that just kept like popping up, that I ended up going to the vets with him and just saying, look, something ain't right. And I was at a new vet's at that point because we'd had obviously the whole thing with losing Jazz and the vets and, their neglect and things like that. So we'd started at this new vet, and the main vet that I was basically being recommended to go and see these vets, and the main vet that I'd been recommended to see was called Heidi. And she kind of went over him, and we had a conversation, and she said, well, maybe it's his hips, quite common in the breed. And I said, well, okay, let's get him hip scored. Let's see what we're at. And she took the x-rays, and his x-rays were really good. I think they were like 2 and 3, which is like brilliant for the breed, especially then. So we're like, it's not his hips. But she showed me the x-rays, and we'd found out accidentally what was actually going wrong, and it wasn't his hips. He'd slipped a disc. Ironic how I have Daxies, who are known for back problems, yet it was my big goof of a flatty that had slipped a disc. So yeah, at 3 and a half, I think he ended up having an operation, which put him out of action for a good 12 weeks on crate rest. He had, I think it was like 22 stitches down his back. Bless him. And he hadn't been in a crate since he was about 6 or 8 months old, other than travelling. And he had to go in a crate. And bless him, because he'd had that foundation of being in a crate, he just accepted it, and he was brilliant. I had to help him going out for wees and things like that, propping his back end up and stuff like that. And obviously, it was a long, long road to proper recovery of hydrotherapy and things like that. Through this, we found he'd also got spondylosis. So that means that his spine was gradually fusing, which is quite uncommon for a young dog. It happens very commonly in older dogs, but by which point they're not really moving around much and it doesn't really cause a problem. But the complication with spondylosis in a younger dog is that the kind of little bony spurs that grow out from each of the vertebrae can trap nerves, because obviously that's where the nerves come out from, the spinal cord. And we didn't know at what rate it would fuse, and I'd been to see Nick Thompson, the holistic vet, and he gave me a load of supplements and things to help him. And he was basically saying the quicker this fuses, the better, because once it's fused, it won't be painful, but it's as it's fusing that is the problem. Time went on, and he was well managed. I obviously had to stop the gun dog training, which was a shame. I did start to train him how to do things like assistance dog tasks, as in like fetching and carrying things in the house and finding my keys and just low, like less strenuous activities, but to keep his brain occupied when he couldn't go out. And he went through lots of phases throughout his life of being on only lead walks, as he kind of had pain spikes and he didn't have pain spikes, and he was managed, but he always had a great quality of life. He still loved to go swimming, but it was always very much keeping an eye on him. But he was always happy, and that's what kept it going. Now, when he got to about 7, 7 and a half, something like that, so the obvious age that you'd expect the breed to develop cancer, he just couldn't get up. As you try to encourage him to get up, he would scream, and it was horrific. I've still got videos of him screaming, and it's awful. It really is. And we rushed him to the vets. And they said, okay, it could just be a very bad pain spike. And we'd figured out that he'd got lumbar sacral disease as well as spondylosis. And we weren't worried about slip discs as such at this point, but it was more just managing his pain levels. And I remember a lot of people at that age, because of his age, a lot of people at that point, especially Daxi people who knew me well, kind of suggesting that maybe it was time to say goodbye because it was so bad. And I understand that. I understand where they were coming from, but they didn't know him as a dog. And his spark was still there, but him crawling, and I mean crawling on his belly out to the garden while screaming so we could go for a wee, was horrific. It really, really was horrific. But the vets came up with a plan and they said, look, we think that it's a bad pain spike, but what we will do is we will inject him with dapamethrin, so a steroid, direct into his lumbar sacral joint. I think it was about every 6 weeks. He'll have to go under anaesthetic for it because then we need to x-ray and make sure that we're getting it exactly in the right spot, and that will help him. So, of course, I was going to do anything that I could to try. And there were still thoughts that it maybe could be cancer at that point. He was insured, with, you know, thank God. And we started with these dapamethrin injections. And after about 3 days after he'd had this injection, he like turned a corner. So within a week, he was, you know, totally, not totally back on form, but like a happy dog that could move around without screaming and had more than enough quality of life. And he was obviously on painkillers as well and things like this. So this dapamethrin injection happened, I think, maybe 3 or 4 times. And during this, he'd managed to, he developed like a little, like a cyst around the soft part of his back end. I don't want to be too graphic. So obviously with his tail wagging, things like that, it was causing friction. So I'd said to the vet, when he next comes in, which was, you know, it was coming up that he was going to have one of these injections, while he's under, can you take it off? Because, you know, it's causing a problem. And they said, yeah, that's fine. And I obviously didn't want to put him under more times than I needed to. And they agreed that that was the best thing to do. Now he went in for this and they took it off. And as they were injecting him, they obviously needed to x-ray him, as I said before. And they rang me and they said, we're not going to inject him. And I said, okay. And they said, we need to see you. So I came in. And Merle had kind of come round a bit by then, so I knew I was taking him home. But I didn't understand why they'd not give him these injections. And they said, the problem is, I'm looking at the x-rays. Now we've had a few. We have a few to compare. And there is less bone. Like, he's losing bone, which, you know, obviously is not how spondylosis works. There's more bone. And we don't think that this is the right course of action. But given all the information we had at the time, we thought that was the best move. So there's no blame there. You know, like everything pointed towards him having these injections. And I understand totally why. But these injections had actually made the condition worse. We just didn't know what the condition was. But again, no blame. You know, we all made the best choice with the information that was given at the time. And me being me, you know, I usually have the dogs who have the weird issues. So they said it could be one of two things. It could be cancer eating away at his bone, or it could be a disc infection. So an infection within his discs or disc, neither of which would be totally curable. They'd be manageable, but not curable. And the only way to know was to take him for another MRI scan, which he'd had at least 2 by this point over his lifetime. And I'm thinking, well, he's made a good age for the breed. And I don't know whether, is it worth taking him for another MRI? I think at this point as well, the insurance was almost maxed out for the year. And if I was to take him for an MRI, that was it for the year then. So whatever the answer was, there was no insurance money after that to be able to deal with it. So for a few days I sat and mulled it over. I thought, oh no, there's just, what's the point of getting this done if we can't help him anyway and neither of them's curable? And I don't know what it was that changed my mind, but after a few days I thought, no, sod it, I want to know. It was probably him that, you know, it was probably Merle's attitude, because he was happy. And I wanted him to continue to be happy. So, I mean, the amount of last holidays I must have had with Merle was unreal. And I remember booking the MRI scan. And the MRI scan was like Derbyshire way, some miles away from where I lived. So I decided to book a couple of days away around it, thinking, well, whatever the answer is, it's probably going to be his last little break. So we took him and we took Moss as well, because they were best buddies. I left the other guys at home, with care, of course, but got a little cottage in the middle of nowhere and took him for this scan. And they said, it's a disc infection. So it's like, okay. It's a disc infection. He needs three different types of antibiotics for a minimum of 6 months to get it under control, because it's so kind of deep in there. It's going to have to take a lot of blasting, really, to get this under control. It will never totally disappear, but it should be manageable. Okay. So it was good news that it wasn't cancer, but it was still like the question of, where does this money come from? How do I do this? And I think there was probably about 6 months left of the policy. So it was having to get through that 6 months of helping him before the new policy year started and I could start claiming again. But he was so happy. And that's what kept him going and kept me going and kept me fighting for him. He was just so happy. I remember doing the maths, and I think from the vets, if I'd have ordered the medications direct from them, it was £450 to £500 per month for these three antibiotics. It ended up about 12 tablets a day. It was quite ridiculous. I mean, bless him, he was good at taking tablets, which made a massive difference. Because, you know, he'd been on acupuncture before. He'd been through pretty much every alternative therapy. But yeah, it was big money. And I was already spending out a lot on dog insurance anyway. You know, I had, at that point, we had five dogs, two cats. And I'm not sure if I'd got Billy the pony at that point. But in other words, a lot of insurance, which was costing more than the mortgage every month anyway. Never mind another £450 to £500 a month for medications for Merlin. And I spoke to Heidi, the vet, and said, you know, we need to work out a cheaper option of doing this. And I did my research and I basically asked for the vets to write me a prescription for me to find it and order it online, which they gratefully did. They charged me for the prescription, which is, you know, their right to do so. But I managed to get it down to about £240 a month, which was still big money, but it was more doable. It was under half. So yeah, he went through that. He was on that and painkillers for a good 3 months. And then he had another 3 months off painkillers, but on the antibiotics. I was supporting his gut in as many ways that I could, because I'm a big believer in as little medication as possible. And this kind of, you know, I wanted to help support his gut because it was having all these things in them, all these chemicals in them all the time. So giving him lots of different kind of pre and probiotics and natural yogurt and things like that to help support him, which also had its own costs, but he was worth every penny. And I remember the last day of giving him, after 6 months of giving him the antibiotics, and looking back and thinking, well, I've done it. And he's my dog. He is happy. He is as healthy as he can be. I think at that point, the only thing that you could tell by looking at him is his tail wasn't as active as you would expect a flatty. It was quite limp, which is to do with the lumbar sacral disease, but he would still wag it. It just wasn't like properly waving from side to side. They just didn't have the same nerve action, I suppose, as a normal flatty at that point. But other than that, you would never, ever know it. And, you know, by the time that he was, what, nearly eight, and then we had a few more last holidays thinking we were on borrowed time. And it wasn't until a month before his 11th birthday, so he made double digits, which was a miracle, never suffered with cancer and had a happy life. And he just got up this one morning and I got up, looked down at him and realised the spark wasn't quite there. And I just knew it was time. He was such a big character. You know, he was in everyone's faces. He was everyone's friend. It was just a big presence, physically and spiritually. He loved everyone and everything, and the spark was starting to go. And I remember having the conversation and saying, today's the day. I hate to say it, but it is. Gave him some painkillers just to help support him. Took him for a big walk at his favourite place. He got to swim, but the energy wasn't quite there, which is, you know, that just like proved the fact that I was making the right call. We got Heidi to come out to the house. He got all excited to see Heidi. And even she said it was the end of an era because, you know, of course, he was a regular in the vets. He was like a celebrity in there. And I said, he's only so excited because you're here. And she said, yeah, I know. And he was put to sleep in the kitchen on his bed. And I remember totally just crying out, like absolute pain when he'd gone. I've never done that. And it was, so my heart was ripped out. And it was the right call. I'm getting upset now talking about it. He helped me through so much. This is why he's going to end up being a book. And there's going to be a lot more to tell you about him. I'm only talking about his health right now. So I asked Heidi to just give me a few minutes. I wanted to let the other guys say goodbye. Now, I've witnessed this a few times with my own dogs and other packs of animals and dogs and things like that. And I actually still have it all on video. I videoed it. Every single dog being let in to the room to process, to see what had happened. And they all ignored him. They all knew. Now, I've seen other dogs cry out like I did. I've seen other dogs try and bury them, you know, try and cover them up or to try and lie down with them. You know, there is a whole vast array of behaviours you may see in this situation, but all of them, and at this point there was six, so there was the other five, just came in and kind of went, okay, it's as if they knew as well. Yeah, I've got his ashes back, and his ashes are spread up at my favourite place with two of my birds, with Bella's ashes, Siggy's ashes. It took me at least 2 years to actually spread his ashes, which is a long time for me, but I just didn't want to let go. The strange thing was, that was a Friday afternoon, but for that whole weekend, I mean, don't get me wrong, that Friday night, I think I must have downed a bottle of rum and I didn't go to sleep. I was just a mess. But the only thing that I did find comforting was I felt his presence with me, and then it gradually dissipated, I think. But it was as if he was still in the house in some ways. I just felt him there. I've still got a little bit of his ashes left, and at some point I will get some jewellery made with his ashes in. I've waited for many years to be in a position for me to have another flatty. And there's been lots of doubts. There's been lots of, there'll never be another Merle. And I could have murdered him when he was younger. And I really could have. And do I want to go through that again? And, you know, there'll never be another Merle. And that's what it keeps coming back to. And I'd actually got my name down for a puppy from a breeder that I, you know, love and trust. And the time was meant to be this summer. Ada came along before then. And I had to make a call one way or the other. And I do think that it was the right call to make. Having Ada and not another flatty, I would love another flatty. But I think Ada's kind of reassured me, and I'm looking forward to making new memories and new adventures with her. But Merle will always be very close to my heart. And yeah, it was, despite everything was against him right up until the end, he was an absolute trooper, and I have no regrets with him at all. It just would be nice if dogs lasted a bit longer, wouldn't it? It really would. But yeah, anyway, I have gone on a bit of a spiritual thing today, I think, as well. I was on a call the other day with one of our crew members, and we were talking about how dogs are our mirrors, and a great book to read, by the way, Your Dog is Your Mirror, and how sometimes our dogs are reflecting our own internal emotions, whether or not we're aware of them and the stage that we are at that point. And I know I've touched on this before with a couple of guests, but with all the changes that are happening at the minute with me, I think I'm more in a reflective zone. And perseverance is the thing that keeps coming back to me. Perseverance and patience. I remember the first time introducing Merlin to my dad. Now, I'd had 13 years of being separated from my dad, and there was a lot of, like, you know, let's just say the family issues and drama and whatever. So most of my adult, like from the age of 18 to, 31, no contact. So I'd had a lot of my life, like a lot of my adult life and my growth emotionally, spiritually, with dogs, you know, professionally in that time. And I remember having got back in touch with dad, and I was working on our relationship, taking Merle up north and introducing him. And my dad was very much he always had shepherds, and it was the dog will do. Not in a cruel way, but the dog will do what it's told. And Merle was being his usual exuberant self, saying hello, wagging his tail. Now, Merle didn't jump up. Past about 12 months, he didn't jump up. Earlier than 12 months, he did. But my dad expected him to sit, and he went to push his back end down, and I just went, no, don't do that! And I proper snapped at my dad, because that's the old school way. You shove their bum down, I want you to sit. But obviously, with Merle's back problems, that's the worst thing you could have done. And he looked at me going out, and I don't think he ever actually really understood properly. My dad's passed now, but the reasoning why. But I know one of my biggest fans of the podcast is my eldest little brother, so he'll be listening now. And he had a massive bond with Merle and absolutely adored him. And I know he's been waiting for this episode. So, hey, Sam. And I've got some amazing memories. I mean, he knew him for what? Just over a year. But Sam was always, you know, how's my boy? Where's my goon? I want to see Merle. Bring him up. And yeah, there's lots of memories. Lots of memories. Anyway, I will leave it there and I will be back. I will be back soon with another amazing guest. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.